Good evening, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to 93.3 FM, CFXU The Fox. This is St. FX's student radio station, and right now you're listening to Social Justice Radio. My name is Rachel Garbery, and in the studio tonight we have Mr. Rajagopal and Dr. John Langdon.
Evening, everybody.
Good evening.
So this is a really wonderful opportunity for us to have Mr. Rajagopal in the studio with us. He's with us all the way from Kerala in southern India, and for the past 2 months he's been acting as the Cody Chair in Social Justice. So Mr. Rajagopal's resume is quite impressive, and he's very well known around the world for his nonviolent activism following Gandhi's principles of peace. He's the former vice chair of the Gandhi Peace Foundation, as well as the founder and president of the Ekta Parishad grassroots social movement, of which we will be talking about this evening. So thank you so much, Mr. Rajagopal. Thank you for being here. We'll kind of get you closer up there. So as this is Social Justice Radio, mm-hmm. I thought maybe we could start by asking you what social justice means to you, and maybe what happened in your life or how you came to be involved in social justice and activism.
Yeah. See, I was a student of a school where we were taught Gandhi's principles. We call it Gandhian school, where young people learn very early in their life to live a Gandhian way of life. And what does it mean? It means you need to produce your own food, you need to spin your yarn to weave your cloth. So this is what they call a self-sufficient way of living, right? Not to be dependent, but to be self-sufficient. That's the main principle of the Gandhian education. So in this education, one major focus is that whether you only care for yourself or you also care for others, whether you have any interest in the community in which you live. So caring for the community came very early in our education. And that is how I got involved in the social justice agenda, because we were supposed to go to nearby villages and find out what is the condition of people, whether they have enough to eat or they are suffering. So even as a young boy, I was introduced to this agenda of social justice, because it is not only caring for yourself, but also caring for others. So as I grew up, I started looking around and understanding how, as a young man, I can intervene in the society to make a change. Mm. And that brought me actively into the issue of social justice. And when you fight for social justice, you need to use nonviolent method. So social justice and nonviolence and peace, I created a basket whereby use nonviolent method in order to create a just society. A just society will be a peaceful society. So you cannot have peace in isolation. Peace need to be on the basis of justice. And for justice, you need to struggle. And struggle need to be nonviolent. Mm. So there is a step leading to the other step. And I was involved in many, many actions related to social justice, basically fighting injustice at every level. Mm. It can be injustice in the economic field. It can be injustice in the social field. It can also be in the political field. But wherever you find injustice, stand up and speak about it. Mm. Fight against it so that you can create a just society in the long run. That's what I do.
Mm. Thank you very much for that. And how have you found your experience with taking those principles of peace and kind of applying them or sharing them with people in Antigonish and in the Cody community?
I think there is great reception here, right? One thing I found, people really want to understand Gandhi, you know, why Gandhi took the path of nonviolence for getting freedom for India, and how he practiced nonviolence in his struggle, etc. So there is a great interest to understand Gandhi. especially in Antigonish, because Antigonish also has a history of a social movement.
Yes.
Led by Moses Kodi.
Yes.
Right? So there is a real link in terms of course, Gandhi led a movement at a national level in India, and Justice Kodi led a social movement in Antigonish. But both were basically trying to address the issues related to economic injustice and social injustice.
Mm.
So I think it fits in very well in Antigonish, and people are quite interested. And I also found that the student community is also very recipient, in the sense they like to hear about the agenda of social justice. They're also wanting to know what are the methods and techniques that they can use in order to advance the agenda of social justice. So during my stay among the farmers, I had good discussion in Antigonish.
Mm.
Among the students, I had good discussion about social justice. And the general reception was very good, very, very good. And I'm very happy about it. Yeah,
great.
The interactions are very, very, very interesting. And while speaking to them, I also learn a lot of things.
Yes.
How they are trying to tackle their problems at their level.
Mm.
Yeah.
So you spoke to building relationships with farmers here and having some discussions here. And how does that connect to your experience with activism at home?
See, I think from a social justice point of view or economic justice point of view, I think the farmers in Antigonish are also suffering now. I should not just limit to Antigonish. When I went to PEI, I found the same thing. You know, small farmers are losing control over their land. As a result, they are forced to move out into other areas looking for employment. I really don't know whether there are enough employment for them to look. So I'm told many are now moving to Alberta.
Mm.
Right, to do mining,
yes.
sand mining and making oil, etc. So I think people who are really interested to do farming should not be forced to go out of farming, because larger companies are moving in to produce or do industrial farming. Now, industrial farming will mean a lot of mechanization. Industrial farming will mean a lot of chemicals and fertilizer. So slowly we are poisoning our own food.
Mm.
So on one side, we are creating unemployment by pushing people out from small farming. On the other hand, those who are consumers are forced to eat poison in the name of food. So I think there is a gross injustice at that level. So it is time for the farmers and farming community of this area to voice their agenda. It's also time for the students of St. Francis University to stand up in support of those farmers,
yes,
who are really wanting to stay in farm and cultivate food.
Mm.
Right? So, because food being so dear to all of us, because ultimately all our work, towards the end of the day, we all need a good meal.
Yes.
Now, where is this meal going to come? It has to come from the farmer, from the farm.
Mm.
So, disrespect to farm and farmers, disrespect to land and food production will be basically disrespect to ourselves, that we want to eat bad food.
Mm.
At the end of the day. So I think this connection between our life and land and farmer, this has to be very clearly established. And then I think people need to stand up. If you don't stand up for others, for the farmers, at least stand up for your own food, because you want good quality food. So I think there is a huge connection between what we eat and where is it being produced. So I think the university students can now think about what they eat, where is it coming from, and what kind of food is it, how is it being produced, etc. So a kind of a critical analysis of one's own food will probably lead to working with the farmers and helping the farmers.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And on that note of food, I'm going to play a song by Canadian artist FM Hilo, based out of Montreal, and this song is called Be Nice to Your Food.
boy and every girl, all the children. Well, you think you so far, where you gonna find a food line? When the distribution system falls down, falls down. When the distribution system falls down. When the distribution system falls down, falls down. When the distribution system falls down. Oh, I said be nice to your food. All your food won't grow.
Welcome back, everybody. This is John Langdon here, and I'm going to ask Mr. Raja Gopal a couple questions. Earlier today, we had a wonderful session mm-hmm. where we had mm-hmm. students from development studies courses meeting with you to kind of have an yes. informal conversation about social justice and about. You know, what does the good life mean? Mm. You know, how do we define progress? How do we define this thing called development?
Yes, absolutely.
And so I was hoping we could kind of go back to that conversation.
Yeah.
And there were some beautiful nuggets that you gave us, nuggets of wisdom, if I can put it like that. So I wondered if you could share. There was a wonderful one around some of Gandhi's teachings.
Yes.
And then another one around different ways of thinking about power, the power to kind of intercede within our societies in a progressive way. And then I think we had a conversation about some practical examples of some of your experiences.
So
maybe I'll throw it over to you with those three things
good,
in mind.
Good, yeah. Yes. In fact, in the discussion, I was bringing the agenda that Mahatma Gandhi gave in terms of economic development. You know, on one side, Gandhi is very well known for his political strategy, his non-violent strategy to fight the British regime. There is very little discussion about his economic strategy or economic theory. So I was trying to bring that agenda to the students. Now look, Gandhi initially said that if you are making an economic plan, think of the poorest person or the weakest person that you have seen in your life. And he said, this is what you do in the family. In the family, when food is ready, you give food to the child, because according to the family condition, he or she is the weakest. Or food is available to the sick. So we always care for the weakest and the youngest in the family. So similarly, in an economic development process, we should always look for the weakest and the poorest in the society. Very often we tend to cater to the powerful people, because powerful people are able to articulate their agenda, so we tend to give everything to them, and finally the poor people get more and more marginalized. So caring for the poor should be a very, very important focus in economic development process. Second thing that he said was, it is not important to have mass production. What is important to have production by masses. So this difference between mass and masses was brought by Mahatma Gandhi, because he said it is not important that one company will produce and dump everything in the market, and only people who have money can buy, because market is a place for powerful people who will survive, others will perish. So in this market ideology, we forget that if we allow some people to produce mass production and dump it in the market, others will have nothing to buy, because they don't have the money to buy, because they were not part of the production process, so they didn't get anything out of it. So any economy will be a successful economy if you allow majority of the people or everyone to participate in that process. And agriculture being an area where large number of people can participate, there is no reason why corporate houses should cultivate the land, and corporate houses should be given large area of land for producing food. Food production can be a very decentralized action in which millions of people can participate. In countries like India, we suffer because large area of land is taken for corporate farming and contract farming, and there is not enough land for people to cultivate. So they migrate into cities and slums. Take the example of Brazil, where 20% people control the entire land and 80% people are into cities and slums. This is a shame. In a world where we have learned to think progressively, we behave in such a primitive way is a matter of shame. The third thing Gandhi said was very interesting. This is a quote very often used by people. The nature has enough for everyone's need and not enough for anybody's greed. Even if one person become greedy, then others will not have enough. So only a need-based development model will survive. Greed-based development model will not survive. See, Gandhi was asked by a journalist whether after achieving freedom, he would like to convert India into an England. And he said, England became England by exploiting half of the universe. And if India wants to become an England, we need more than one universe to exploit, because that is the size of population we have. So I think a greed-based development model cannot sustain. So we need to look at every development model, whether it is greed-based and catering to some people by depriving millions, whether it's a need-based model. So that is one very important principle need to be used in economic development model. And the fourth area is where he spoke about, there's an Hindi term he used, Sarvodaya. Sarvodaya means all-inclusive, well-being of all. Moving from well-being of majority to well-being of all will be a huge jump that we need to make, because in the name of democracy, we have learned to do good for the majority, and majority can decide, and majority can progress at the cost of others. But Gandhi moved a step ahead and said majority is not good enough. We need to be all-inclusive. So considering from the poorest to including everyone was a very interesting theory that Gandhi gave. And I think that all that put together in a basket, you will find a very interesting development model. And he also spoke about trusteeship. He said, the one who is bringing capital is only bringing capital. Others are bringing land. Others are bringing their environment. Others are bringing water. So only the one who is bringing capital, taking away the profit, and people who brought land and environment and water and labor get nothing out of it. It's a very unjust model of development, because you are only bringing one component and others are bringing other components. So I think there's a very interesting Gandhian model that need to be looked into when we come to this economic development paradigm. The second question was related to the kind of struggle that people are leading against the present paradigm of development. See, globalization has brought us to a situation where windows and doors are open. Every country is forced, whether you like it or not. Every country should open their windows and doors for multinational companies to come in and invest. And what are they bringing in? They are bringing money and technology. Capital and technology is brought in to every country, every nook and corner of the world, to exploit the resources. And the resources around which people live. Farmers live on land. Fishermen live around water. And the indigenous people live around forest. So land, forest and water, the God-given resources are taken by multinational companies because they can process and make profit out of it. Now this need to be fought. This process, if we don't fight, there will be greater marginalization, and greater marginalization leading to greater migration to cities, greater migration leading to greater number of slums, and more violence and disaster. So I think we need to read the situation right now and step in to say, look, this cannot be permitted. And this is not a just way of doing it, it's an unjust way of doing it. So in the southern part of India, one small group, there are many examples that we can take from various parts of the world. An example in which I was involved was fighting against a huge Coca-Cola factory. See, the Coca-Cola, we all know that it is not a healthy drink. This is just one kind of addiction, that people are drinking it because they get used to it. And millions of dollars are coming into the pocket of Coca-Cola or the company, just because people are addicted to this drink now. And they exploit the water sources. All good water sources are exploited by this company. All the soft drink companies are doing the same thing. So they came to a village where indigenous people are living, took the land, put up their factory because the government helped them. People could not resist it. But when the company started working, soon people understood that their water sources are polluted. And their children are getting sick because they drink water from the well where the chemicals are thrown. They also understood their land has become bad because the waste of the factory is thrown into their land. So the agitation got built up. After 3 years of agitation, a committee was formed. And the committee had to finally recommend, look, the company is violating. They may be responsible, accountable, company back in their home country. But here, in the third world country, they don't have to be accountable because they think they can do whatever they want to do. So the recommendation finally led to closing of the factory. And now the company is wanting to shift their machines from that village to somewhere else, but then people are not allowing it, that they cannot shift anything unless they pay compensation. Right? So here is a story where a small group of people in a village can challenge the mighty company that is coming from America. So I think we need to learn how to organize our community, how to fight non-violently, how to sustain our fight and not to give in to temptations and money and positions, and continuously work for creating a just world. So the story of a fight in a small village called Plachimada in Kerala of India becomes an interesting inspiration for millions of people, and that can be done anywhere if people are properly organized. And in this organizing, the third area that I wanted to speak, I spoke this morning, was in organizing we can use different kinds of power.
See, one power is called the power of the poor, right? Majid Rahnema, an Iranian, has written a book about it. See, power of the poor, we haven't yet understood the power of the poor. We look at poor and design a charity program to support them. Poverty is not misery. We need to differentiate between poverty and misery. Among poor people, there is still a lot of cultural power, right? On one side, we should discuss about the poverty of the rich, because rich people may have a lot of economic power, but they are emotionally, culturally poor. So poverty cannot be attached only with money, right? You can be culturally poor, you can be emotionally poor, you can also be economically poor. So that is one kind of poverty, but there are other kind of richness within that community. So if we can use other kind of rich qualities of the people, their capacity to suffer, their capacity to walk, their capacity to remain hungry for a day, or their capacity to dance and sing even while they are hungry, their capacity to be in the hot sun, sleep on the road. You see, there are hundreds of things that are the rich qualities of poor people, which need to be brought together into an action. So I call it the power of the poor, and that is a huge energy out there. The second one is called the power of young people. If we don't take this power of young people today, I know the listeners are mainly young people today, so if we don't really get this power to act for positive, bringing justice in the society, this power can be misused. Now, there are many agencies recruiting young people for violence. Violence is a huge industry. It's a paid employment. So young people can get directed to that. There are right-wing political parties waiting to take this young people into their fold. There are people who are selling small arms, wanting these young people to take arms. And there are also many other areas. The market itself, see, the market would like to see all young people as just consumers and not doing anything else, just buying and eating and drinking. So in a world where market is waiting, the violent groups are waiting, the rightist wing political parties are waiting, if we don't get our young people to think right way and act right way in order to create a better society for themselves and also for the next generation, we will be losing a huge energy without really diverting that for good action. And the third power is the power of solidarity, right? Many people can't do much, but they can write a letter to the Prime Minister of a country where people are struggling, right? Even to that level, you can write a letter, you can stand up in support, you can get a journalist to go and do some writing, you can send a few dollars in their support. See, if you want to act, there are hundreds of ways to act and express your solidarity. So solidarity is a huge power. You don't have to go to the field and fight with the people, but then you can take your energy to express your solidarity. And the final thing, and which very important thing, is the power of nonviolence. Don't forget that. You see, we have seen across the globe, and I tell you an example, that a historian came to meet Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, and said, "Mr. Gandhi, there is no history of nonviolent revolution, because Chinese revolution is violent revolution, Russian revolution is violent revolution, and French revolution is violent revolution. So there is no history, and I am a historian. I tell you, you are misleading Indians by telling that there is something called a nonviolent revolution. There is no history of nonviolent revolution." So Gandhiji looked at him and said, "Mr. Professor, you are teaching history, but I am making history." Right? So I think Gandhi really proved that, and what Gandhi did became a chapter later on. So Gandhi knew that the last chapter of the history is not written yet. Many people have done violent revolution, but many also did non-violent revolution. Nelson Mandela did, Martin Luther King did, and you can also do, we can also do. I think non-violence is something very, very powerful, and people can use it if they want to bring about a change in the world and want to create a just world. There's a lot that we can do together by using this force. And a good example was how very ordinary people in this village, Plachimada, fought against a huge company called Coca-Cola. And there are hundreds of examples across the globe, inspiring examples, that people are using nonviolent action for moving forward. So the slogan is, the underlying principle is that between silence and violence, See, don't be silent, don't be violent. These are two extremes. There is a third path called nonviolent direct action, that you can use nonviolence and get into direct action and create a better world for all of us and for our future.
Thank you. Thanks so much for those thoughts and for bringing them out on the air. I think it's really important that, you know, oftentimes I think we can have conversations on this campus that are locked into four walls. With ideas like this, it's important that we break down those walls and that we get them out into circulation for people to hear and for people to discuss. I guess that's part of my next question is really, what do you hope to get out of your time here as the Cody Social Justice Chair? I mean, at the end of the day, when you finish your time here, what do you hope to walk away feeling?
One important area is that while I am here, my efforts will be to get this agenda of social justice debated, right, as much as possible, among the farmers, among the students, among the faculty members, wherever it is possible, bringing the agenda of justice back. And I know that the agenda of justice is very related to peace, and peace is something which we all like. So a peaceful society cannot be created without justice. So more people understand this. The agenda of justice is the only way to get to a peaceful society, peaceful future. So all those who are seeking or looking for peace need to work on the agenda of justice, right? You cannot create an unjust society and expect to have a peaceful world, right? So this link, this is what one I am trying to establish. Second thing I am trying to establish is because the CODI International Institute provides a platform for people from different parts of the world. As I'm involved in promoting nonviolence and justice issue across the globe, I'm using this opportunity to interact with people who are here from different parts of the world, so that when they go back, they can be a kind of a link in terms of the taking this agenda forward. And I'm quite satisfied that this is happening. The third thing is, how do I look at the link between CODI Institute and St. Fax University with the community around, right? Because justice is not something that you need to preach, you need to act. Mm-hmm. So now, here is a huge institution, a big university. There is a CODI International Institute, which is basically built on the agenda brought forward by Moses CODI, where again justice was very important. So how do we, these two institutions together, the university and CODI Institute together, how do we understand the society around us and try to influence the life and people around in order to build a just society? Because just society need to be built somewhere, because you need examples. So when people come to India, they tell me, take us to those villages where we can see something positive happening. Then I need to give them that ground to see. So hundreds and thousands of people coming to this university and many coming to the CODI Institute need to learn not only from history of Moses CODI. They need to see things around them. How is a just society built? How do you build a participatory society? How do you build a bottom-up economy? How do you build a just economy? And these people want to see, right? So one interesting thing will be to bring this forward, this agenda, and see in the coming 3 to 5 years, how do we work with the farmers and beekeepers and carpenters and the shopkeepers to make a bottom-up economy, a participatory economy, so that people will come and listen only not to the history, but also will see something happening on the ground today. So these are some of the things in my mind, and some of this may come through and some of them will still remain an idea, but we will work towards it in the coming days.
Well, with that to think about and to look forward to, I think it's a good time to maybe switch over and hear a piece of music that is actually coming from some of the work that Raja has been doing. And maybe you can tell us a little bit about this song, and then we'll play it.
This is a song written long back. So there was a very important person in India called Vinoba Bhave. He walked throughout the country for 14 years asking for land. He said, land distribution, if the government is not doing it, let the people do it on their own. And believe me, he got 4.1 million acres of land in gift. And this was redistributed. And he said, look, when you speak about nation, this is too limited, that you are speaking only about your nation. Speak about the world. Say Jai Jagat. That means victory of the world. Don't say victory of India, and then others will say victory of China and victory of Pakistan. Let us all say victory of the world. If we want to win, we will win together. Otherwise, we will all be defeated together. So that is the concept of this song.
Germany, Germans sing with me. I go to Japan, Japanese sing. Come on, Indians must sing. It's full what? Nyayaka vidhan ho,
Nyayaka vidhan ho,
sabka hak saman ho,
sabka hak saman ho,
sabki apni ho zameen,
sabki apni ho zameen,
sabka aasman ho,
sabka aasman ho, jai jagat, jai jagat, jai jagat pukar ja, jai jagat, jai jagat, jai jagat pukar ja.
रंग भेद छोड़ दो
रंग भेद छोड़ दो
जाति पाति तोड़ दो
जाति पाति तोड़ दो
मानवों की आपसी
मानवों की आपसी
अखंड प्रीत जोड़ दो
अखंड प्रीत जोड़ दो जय जगत जय जगत जय जगत पुकार जा जय जगत जय जगत जय जगत पुकार जा
शांति की हवा चले
शांति की हवा चले
जग कहे भले भले
जग कहे भले भले
दिनों गे स्नेहा का
दिनों गे स्नेहा का
रात रंज की ढले
रात रंज की ढले
दिनों गे स्नेहा का
दिनों गे स्नेहा का
रात रंज की ढले
रात रंज की ढले जय जगत जय जगत जय जगत पुकार जा
जय जगत जय जगत जय जगत पुकार जा
जय जगत पुकार जा
सिर अमन पे वार जा
सिर अमन पे वार जा
सबके हित के वास्ते
सबके हित के वास्ते
अपना सुख विसार जा
अपना सुख विसार जा जय जगत जय जगत जय जगत पुकार जा जय जगत जय जगत जय जगत पुकार जा
जय जगत
जय जगत
थैंक यू
थैंक यू. Welcome back to Social Justice Radio on 93.3 FM, The Fox. So we're still here in the studio with Mr. Rajagopal. So welcome back. And once again, that was Jai Jagat, or Victory to the World, a Hindi song for peace. So thank you so much. You've shared so much wonderful insight with us about what you're hoping to take away and, you know, how you've learned to incorporate these principles of peace into the work that you've been doing. Mm. And a really interesting and inspiring piece that I read about in finding out who I would be getting to meet today was this Ekta Parishad social movement in India. So I was reading about this online, and it seemed to me this epic march of over 100,000 people from what I read. So, and this was over access to land and farmers' land rights. So maybe you could talk a little bit about your experience with Ekta Parishad and what it was about, what it meant to be a part of that.
It's a very interesting question. See, Long March is a very important way that you can take nonviolent action forward. As I said earlier, people can walk. 10 people will walk, that will make a small pressure. But imagine thousands of people walking together. That is going to be a kind of a revolution in itself, you know. So we have learned this technique that walking together, thousands of walking together, can really make a difference. So in 2006, 500 people began to walk. So this walk is always 350 kilometers to the capital of India. So we begin from a city called Gwalior, south of Delhi, and then we walk to Delhi, that is 350 kilometers on the national highway. So first of all, 500 people went in 2006 to tell the government, look, in 2 years' time, please address this problem of landlessness. You are giving land and resources to multinational companies. Stop this. Give land to the poor people because they want land for putting up a shelter. They also want land for cultivating food. So the priority should be giving land to the people. So this warning was given by 500 people walking to Delhi. But because government didn't do anything, in 2007, 25,000 people walked. And this is very interesting preparation. So when 25,000 people walk, it is not just walking. They have to prepare for 3 years. Every day, every family has to collect 1 rupee in a pot. See, 1 rupee is what? It's like 67 rupees will make a dollar. So it's a small portion of a dollar. But every day in the evening before cooking their food, they put 1 rupee in the pot and 1 handful of rice or wheat in the pot. So this is basically in 3 years, imagine, they will collect 1,000 rupees to go and participate in the march. They will also collect 3 quintals of rice so that people back home can have enough food to eat for 1 month while this main person is walking. So people's participation is very high. And then they walk, they suffer. So 25,000 people reaching Delhi in 1 month. So this gets huge support. See, when 25,000 people march, even the middle class people who are not generally active will become active. College students and school students who are not generally active will also become active because they can't imagine 25,000 people so disciplined walking on the road, sleeping on the road, singing on the road. So we had huge support and the media came running to support it from British broadcasting to everyone. So that made a huge impact in terms of changing the policy. So some people started getting land because of this action. Some committees were formed, some land redistribution took place, but that was not good enough. The government didn't fulfill its promise quite well. So we decided to organize another one for 100,000 people. So in 2012, 100,000 people walked. And even before we reached Delhi, the government came running to meet the walking people and sign an agreement. This is what we call 10-point agreement. And now we are working on that, the 10-point agreement and implementation of 10-point agreement. But we already designed our next action. We know that even 10-point programs are not going to make radical change in the life of poor people because in a globalizing world, resources are given to the poor people, more resources are given to the powerful lobbies, the cement lobby, the iron lobby, the liquor lobby, the timber lobby. All these lobbies are together to take more resources than what people get. So in 2020, 7 years ahead, we have 1 million people for a Just India. So 1 million people from all over the country will organize into a powerful force. And who are these 1 million people? Who are the people who are left behind, right? So the those who benefit from globalization may not stand immediately. But people who are losing from globalization and its impact will stand up. So this 1 million people are going to be organized in 2020. And there again, there will be huge solidarity action across the globe. You know, it's like when people were marching in India in 2012, there were similar marches in England, in France, in Switzerland, in Colombia. These are all solidarity marches helping the march in India to be successful. So people's action, organized action, disciplined action, nonviolent action can create great impact in terms of policy shift. And that is what we need to understand. Now, For example, in Canada, when Idle No More, the campaign was happening, if this campaign was supported by a large number of middle class people, it would have created greater impact. So when poor people act, ordinary people act, the middle class people have a responsibility to stand up and express solidarity. I tend to think that the middle class may not act in the interest of others, but then even in own interest, like if because of problems, if the society will become more violent, how can you live in a violent society? So in order to contain violence, you need to deliver justice. So for that, middle class will have to stand up. If you drive people from the rural areas to urban areas, the urban areas will be crowded. And so you will not like to live in a crowded city. So you want to live in a city that is pleasant. So in your own interest, the middle class need to stand up now. And that is what we are trying to do in India, to educate the ordinary people to stand up for their rights, educate the middle class to stand up for the rights of the poor in their own interest. Right? And these two need to come together for making basic changes in the society, because ultimately, even with all the money and comforts that we gain, we are not going to be happy if the society is going to be very violent. And violence can be contained through nonviolent action by providing justice. Right? That is one lesson that we are trying to do in India. And I think not only in India, when I go to Colombia, when I go to Brazil, people are just asking for this. See, they say, how did you do it? Tell us. Mm. We also want to do it. So many are wanting to act. If ideas are given, I think people will accept those good ideas and act accordingly, and that can bring about a change. And Ekta Parishad was built like that. When Ekta Parishad was built, it all began with very ordinary people. So in the training programs, we help young people to understand, look, don't speak about your karma. And don't say that because of my karma I am poor. You can fight your karma. And God didn't make you poor. Poverty is man-made. So you can fight poverty. So slowly helping young people to understand that they are packed in a wrong analysis. They are made to believe karma has brought them to poverty. And give them confidence to act. And then you will find the powerful young people coming together and acting. But initially it is difficult. There is a hostile society in front of you which will not listen to what you are trying to say. So initially you need to have patience to say it again and again, do it again and again, not to get disappointed and frustrated and go back, but to continue with your efforts. You know, that we do in every field. In examination, if you fail once, you go again at the third time. Similarly, in action, if you don't succeed once, don't worry, go again. So I think if people are organized properly and non-violently, even small actions can bring about very interesting changes. I have a small story to share. You see, this is a young girl called Sarojini who went to a village as a social activist after the training program. And she began to organize the women. It was difficult, but then she organized the women. And the first action was fighting against a liquor shop. Alcohol shop, because drinking alcohol, spending all the money in alcohol creates more poverty, and when there is more poverty at home, children will not get enough food, they can't go to school, so it's a chain. So they decided to fight the alcohol shop, and because of their struggle, in spite of opposition from men and alcohol lobby, they were able to stop that alcohol shop. And after stopping the alcohol shop, they had enough to eat. Not only enough to eat, they had enough money to save. So every month they started saving 10 rupees, and slowly there became a bank, a small money bank. And they could lend money to others when they wanted money, and with a small interest people returned it. So the money bank became very, very powerful. They began a grain bank. They started collecting 5 kilos of rice and the grain bank. So there is enough money, there is enough grain. So the village from where people used to migrate, the migration stopped, because when they had difficulty, they had a place to go for grain, they had a place to go for money. And looking at the parents, the children began a bank. Now I tell you, this bank is spreading like wildfire. Every village has a children's bank now. And children can have enough money for buying their food, they can have enough money to buy their textbook, No child will say, I will not go to school because I don't have the money to buy my cloth and books. So this children's bank are becoming very popular. So something that began by a young girl fighting against alcohol shop is now spreading into creation of new banks and people becoming happy. And if you look at the history, you will feel very happy that how one person can make so much change in an area of 10 to 15 villages. Right? So I think every person has tremendous potential. Identifying that potential and releasing that potential for change is very important. Otherwise, this potential will be used in looking at film throughout the day, looking at TV throughout the day. You can use your energy. You will have to use your energy. So that is one area we need to be concerned. The second area is whenever we wherever we live, whichever environment we live, how do we increase the agenda of justice? And that is what one message I have for the students here. I know that there is very interesting efforts going on in terms of tracking the food chain, where is the food chain coming and how people are consuming, etc. So I think it will be a good idea for the young people to look at two things, according to me. In fact, three. One, to look at the farmers and what is the condition of the farmers and how we can help the farmers to produce good food so that good food will come into my plate. Right? So we need farmers to produce good food because I can eat good food. So protecting the farmers and farming interest is one area where students can get involved. Second area is to look at the total consumption of soft drink in the campus. You know, we like soft drinks, but then probably we are putting too much money into the pocket of the soft drink makers. A small portion of that money can also go to people who are fighting for drinking water. You know, why can't we provide, using this technology, we can provide some drinking water also while providing soft drink to large number of people. So if we are spending large amount of money into soft drinks, can we spare 1% of that money to support some community that is fighting for drinking water in Colombia, Brazil, or Kenya, or India, wherever it is? So that will be very, very interesting. The third area will be to look at our own way of dealing with food, that by mistake we continue to waste a lot of food while millions of our people in the world don't have enough to eat. So as student community, we can decide that we will not waste food. When we eat, we will be careful not to waste food and reduce waste. And even if there is waste, ultimately some waste will be there. How can we use it for feeding animals? So identify those farmers who are producing meat. So provide that food to the farmers who want to feed their animals. So create a link between our day-to-day behavior and the problems of the world. It can be farmer, it can be a group fighting for water. So we can always create a relationship between our day-to-day life and the larger struggle. And that way, I think everyone, even while you are a student actively involved in studying, you can continue to contribute to create a just world. You know, rather than contributing to create an unjust world, systematically we can contribute to creating a just world in our own interest, also in the interest of the future.
Yes, thank you. And so important to think that the decisions you make and the things you choose to consume are, you know, there's a story behind that. Yeah. And, you know, you're choosing when you buy something to either look beyond yourself or just to consume. And then also that there's so much power in numbers and coming together and coming in solidarity to create a more socially just community. Like you were saying, just it's amazing to think that walk started with 500 people.
Yeah.
In 2006, but it wasn't enough, and you kept going, and then ended up with 100,000. So we'll be staying tuned for 2020, with
right.
A million marching.
Absolutely.
So, thank you so much, Mr. Rajagopal, coming in.
It was a pleasure talking to the student community and the local community through this radio.
Mm.
I really enjoyed it.
Great. And on this note of students coming together and organizing around food, I just want to take note that there's a great student effort going on right now on our campus called the Campus Food Strategy Group. So that's a group of dedicated students who are working with different stakeholders in St. FX to try to incorporate more local food into our campus food system. And if anyone wants to get involved in that, get in touch with the radio station, and they can pass you on to the proper networks. So thank you so much. I really appreciated having you in, and I guess the note that I'd like to leave on was something that you said earlier tonight, but just that the last chapter of history is not written yet. So, you know, really, we can take these peaceful principles.
Let us make new history.
Mm. Yeah. Exactly. So thank you so much, everyone, for listening to Social Justice Radio on 93.3 FM The Fox. And tune in next week where we'll be talking about Treaty Day. So thank you and good night.
Now I've been happy lately.